Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. And if you find that tonight's show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics in poetry. And also make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello there, Rex.
What's that?
Oh, you know what? Life is good and quiet. The teenager's away. The roommates are keeping themselves busy and away. It's basically me and the dogs and poetry and, you know, and the weather's starting to cool off. So, yeah, it's all pretty good. Just, you know. Looking forward to hanging out with you as always and maybe some other cool poets. And, of course, you know, getting into the poetry. So, but what's up with you? What have you been up to?
Not much. Same old, same old.
Same old. I get that. I made myself get the dishes done today. I baked a banana bread, but I actually, well, it was more like a banana cake, but I only had 2 bananas, which didn't quite seem like enough, so I also added blueberries and walnut. Turned out pretty good.
What'd you do, slice the bananas?
No, I mash them, you know.
That's a whole lot easier if you stick them in the fridge for a couple of days. They break down then you can mash them easy by putting them in the blender.
Unfortunately, my blender's broken, but I have actually stored overripe bananas in the freezer before, which works really well for baking or even for making smoothies. So, yeah, always good to know those little tricks of the trade. Yeah. Now, if I just had some secret to getting people to eat leftovers, I'd be happy. But unfortunately, you know, the only way to get people to eat leftovers is to disguise them as something else.
Well, that's not too hard.
Yeah, well, it depends. Like, you know, I made this really good, what I thought was a really good chicken and rice soup. And nobody's eating it. They haven't even, like, tasted it. So, you know, and so it's really difficult to disguise a turkey and or chicken and rice soup into something else. I suppose I could throw it over biscuits. But, anyways, but, yeah, so, but otherwise, you know, life is good. I had just been, you know, relaxing and, you know, just enjoying myself. So, yeah. All right. So now today we are going to start out with some carryovers. One of them is from, the first one is from the Metaphysical Poet, and then the rest of the carryovers are from the photography of Eve Arnold. And then we'll get into our main contest, which is poetry inspired by the art of Oswaldo Guayayasmin. Oh, it should be a good show. All right, Rex, what do you say? You ready to get the ball rolling?
Yep. Shaking Hand Liza by Duncan Roth. She loses me in eyes. Lies are given, driven, and ignored. Too smart to see above board. Too stupid to see shadow for shade. Her heart is like feathers. Her late weighted, her hate weighted in stones. Bones are picked clean, just marrow and memories. Sun, rise, alone. Fibers and fingerprints, tighter and tighter. Shaking hand lighter, a spark and no flame, a name without a reason, treason in the lighthouse, midnight skies and broken shores, death loves life and landmarks, life loves death and shores, and fall.
Great read there, Rex. Duncan wrote two quotes, "Gather the flowers but spare the buds" by Andrew Marvel, and "Life is an incurable disease" by Abraham Cowley. All right, and let's see here. I think it's interesting the two stanzas are parted by the sun rise alone. And I thought that was great wordplay because it can be, you know, the sun itself rises alone, you know, despite its light, there's, you know, nothing, it's always just alone, or spending sunrise alone. But it's interesting because of the fact that he has a period after each word. So each word, sunrise and alone, are separated. And I think that really creates more of an atmosphere of the loneliness and the separation. Let's see, that first stanza, the too smart to see above board, too stupid to see shadow for shape. I feel like too stupid to see shadow for shape means, you know, not like the idea of not seeing a forest for the trees. Her hate weighed in stone, bones are picked clean, just marrow and memories. You know, to me, it feels like the idea of somebody who just uses people and then leaves them feeling empty inside. A spark and no flame, a name without reason, treason in the lighthouse. I mean, this is great rhyming flow, wonderful imagery and truly just a powerful write on the whole idea of love and loss, and then, you know, realizing that, well, as it says, man, life, love, death, and chores. You know, it's like, it feels, that last one, I think, speaks to me on the idea of how we spend a lot, so much time of our life just working away only to realize that we've reached the end of it. That's a really thoughtful write and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, since they are two separate stanzas, they kind of walk in the same angle. I'm going to go that first stanza. It's not loss, but it's divorce, because the hits on lies are given. Too smart to see above board, too stupid to see shadow for shape. Her heart is like feathers, her hate wasted in stone. Bone to pick clean, just marrow and memories. The bones pick clean are his, marrow and memories are his. That sort of shaking hand lighter. The shaking hand would be the fear of what might be. Of what might else she have taken in the meantime, but the sun, the rise, and the alone are how he is living in the moment. The back end walks on to that, still hits that note, treason in the lighthouse. That note of memory still lingers. Midnight skies and broken shores. Death loves life and landmarks. Life loves death and shores. So keep him busy, but that treason in the lighthouse still holds its note to the betrayal in the above angled stanza. So.
Great observations there. I like that. Yeah, and you can definitely see and feel the sense of betrayal within the right. So very cool. All right. And what do we got next, Rex?
We have It Feels Like Guilt by Blue Right 76.
All right. And now we're going into carryovers inspired by the photography of Eve Arnold. When we pass in the car through overflowing bins and waste mountains at outskirts, where they are segregated, where goes our mind when our hands find the masks and kerchiefs and car window fasteners as we reminded of wasted food bought and let to rot, or better yet, thrown away when waste contributes to the failing economy of a dense world and the rising climatic crisis? Or are we reminded of why the babies fall from the womb into cradles that don't rock, mothers who can't cuddle, when the cries turn into smiles at the first kiss of the mother, those kisses and smiles seized and burnt? Were their milk stolen in a game of chance? Where their fate is so destined to be born into scorching poverty? Or was it an ace country's play, friends many with avarice and the theft of resources, a chain link to their table? Born in a bipolar jungle, the deer fight for stability while evading the wild predators. Then the wars, civil invasions, where guns more than food come to their space to plunder. What now of those deer as shells and famines rain? Why does guilt raise its head in every person who wastes food or let it go waste, and also speaks of them sad spirits, people like artists and poets who naught but can write of the kid who never knew pencils and books, played with empty pots and cans, who dreams of bread and water, whose eyes looked at us and questioned why? And home. And Rex, your thoughts?
She walks on the the pathetic use of most when it comes to the singularity of third world or worst world countries. The fact that the last three hits on that note of invading, stealing their resources, then leaving the country as nothing but a shell of itself, except the consistency of war that invades their tables, because those tables are always empty. Why? Because you've ruined the ground with all the bombs and the killing field, so there is nowhere to grow anything. And even if it could grow anything, the country is broke. They can't afford to pick up fertilizers so that they can grow their own crops. So the wasteland of all those people who don't look or refuse to look and acknowledge what's going on because they're too comfortable in their own lives. But she also does that note of, people like artists and poets who might do naught but can write of the kid who never knew pencil and books, played with empty pots and cans, who dreams of bread and water, whose eyes looked at us and questioned why. Why is it like this? Well, it's called, I should put it here, avarice, the greed of those who want that which your country holds. And hey, we need that. So instead of actually paying for it, we'll just take it and you can deal with what's left because we don't care. And neither do the people of the world, more or less. Oh, yeah, we can send money over there. Yeah, but sending money for gender studies CRT doesn't really help them because that money never reaches them first off, and they're not interested in gender studies, CRT, and all the other bullshit we got walking across the planet because they've got no water, they've got no food, they need infrastructure, they need fields to grow in, and they need fresh water. Yes, they get money for stuff that they'll never see, and those NGCs over there, that money never reaches the people. It disappears out of the country and finds its way back into the pockets of politicians. So that would be the answer to the question.
Amen to that. Amen. I have to say, I find myself extremely moved by not only Blue Right 76's right, but by your comment, because I find a lot of the harsh truth in it that needs to be said. This is just strong emotive line that does speak on the greed of humanity, how people not only waste food, but waste resources, including money. You know, they're not really looking at what's important. You know the importance of taking care of life, of the importance of taking care of this world and other people. It just becomes all about me, me, me. I like that this basically writes is almost like one big question, you know, making the reader think as they're reading about what we are doing. Is there anything we can do? And, you know, it is a sad, very sad truth that you really have to do your research carefully when it comes to donating your money, because there are a lot of places that do not give nearly as much as you think they do. And it really becomes not, you know, just all about, you know, the greed. This especially hits hard for me, where it says, or are we reminded of why babies fall from the womb into cradles that don't rock, mothers who can't cuddle, when the cries turn into smiles at the first kiss of mother, those kisses and smiles seized and burnt. And born in a bipolar jungle, I really liked that line. That's like one of those lines that it would make a good contest mount. And then it brings us, and also speaks of them sad spirits, people like artists and poets who not but can write of the kid. And I like leading in from the sad spirit to the people like artists and sports who not who can write of the kid, you know, because I think many creative people are sensitive people, and they see what's going on, and they see what's happening, and they want to, and they can write about it, but sometimes you just don't have the answer. Like, you could look into the eyes of a child like this, and you could have the, you know, the factual answers, but sometimes factual answers don't help the child in the moment. This is a wonderful take on the chosen prompt, and beautifully written and very well done. All right, Rex, what do we have next?
All right. Resilience of Few, Nobody Knew by Jody Melton. In the early 1900s, an image of old, a photograph captured, a fate to be told, a doctor and his nurses, their spirits so bright, gathered round a table in the soft, dappled light. Beneath the vast sky, a graveyard stands, a poignant reminder of life's insufferable demands. Amidst the tombstones, they find their respite, discussing treatments and the children's fight. I can't imagine such a heart-wrenching walk through the sanitarium halls with rooms filled with children, crying, underlined with a cough, over 100 years later at Waverly Hills. To walk into their rooms will give you the chills. From the sunrooms where the children try to play, in hopes they find some comfort on their skin from the rays to the shoots at the end of a long, dreary hall that sent the dead down to burn, what courage and empathy it took from them all. Tuberculosis, a foe so severe, yet hope in their eyes it does appear. Their hearts and minds diverted, they stand in the battle against this illness hand in hand. A moment froze, a lunchtime embrace, in this somber setting, their mission they embrace, to heat and comfort with love they impart. Amidst the sorrow they sow, hope in everyone's heart. The past may be gone, but the picture endures, a tribute to those whose dedication ensures that the legacy lives on of compassion and care in the hearts of those healers forever to bear. So let's not forget what these brave men and women endured while they waited to inhale, eager for a cure. And boom.
Great read there, Rex. An excellent write by Jody. Great take on the chosen picture, which is of a family having dinner in front of a graveyard. I think it's more the 1930s or 40s than necessarily the early 1900s, but that's okay because, you know what, to have a good poem, you don't have to be exact when it comes to interpreting a prompt. You know, and yeah, this is a great rhyme and flow, wonderful imagery. I really like how his attention to detail and how he brings us back in time to where when a pandemic of tuberculosis and before, you know, the vaccines and, you know, that became available for it. I like the historical elements of this, but also the humanitarian elements. Great use of the word sanitarium. I can't imagine such a heart-wrenching walk through the sanitarium hall with rooms filled with children crying, underlined with a cough, over 100 years later at Waverly Hills, to walk into their rooms will give you the chills. I don't know, it almost sounds to me like he's been there, either he's done his research. I have to say that those lines speak, you know, and I get that because there are places you can go to where you can just, you know, feel, not, I'm not saying like you literally see ghosts, but you feel the spirit, the chills of those who have long passed. And let's see. A moment froze, a lunchtime embrace, and a somber set in their mission they embrace. to heal and comfort with love they impart amidst the sorrow they sow, hope in everyone's heart. You know, it doesn't matter what time period it is and what struggles we're going through. It's always important to be able to, you know, reach out and comfort each other and be there for each other as much as possible. So I like the heart that's put into those messages. And, of course, the end was great. With, so let's never forget what these brave men and women endured while they wait to inhale either for your wait to inhale. I thought was particularly clever because we're, of course, you know, dealing with tuberculosis, which affected the lungs' ability to draw in air. And this actually, it makes me actually think of the Red Cross, and which I believe actually was, I think the Red Cross was created in the late 1800s. It does actually make me think of not only the people who suffered from tuberculosis, but the nurses, the doctors, and the volunteers that helped them. So great write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Red Cross is not such a clean organization. They got a bad history.
Oh, really?
Although, yes, they helped with the rat lion out of Germany after World War II. By providing new identities and transport, including passports.
I didn't know that. That's scary.
Yeah,
I'll
they
have
did
to
it
look
for
more
Vatican.
Into that.
Well, they weren't the only ones doing it. Vatican was doing their own fair share of that too. So.
Oh yeah, yep. No, there was. You can read about a lot of people. There were a lot of famous people, you know, in Hollywood, and I shouldn't say a lot. But there were people in Hollywood. There was politicians, obviously. I mean, there was a lot of people that supported Hitler's rise to power. I some I think purposefully,
yes,
some I think
not once but twice. Man of the year.
yep. So, other than the fact that the Red Cross has a somewhat questionable history, what did you think of Jody's poem? He never actually said Red Cross.
It used to be called Consumption back in the 19th century. So it did get a little bit better in the old days, weren't so easy either. Then you usually went to a sanitarium to finish out. Once you started spitting up blood, you knew your days were numbered. That's where Doc Holliday spent his last couple of weeks in a sanitarium out in Colorado, I think. And Poe got it twice. He saw his mother die from it and then his wife. So back then, with Poe, you actually had that living in the house. So you knew what was going on. And you lived with that every day, the coughing up blood. And that's when you knew. You best start preparing for the other side of the coin. But they didn't understand. They didn't understand how viruses and bacteria work. So moving into the 20th century, they got better at it. It still took some time. But this does spark to a little bit more congenial time. Instead of flushing the people in and flushing them out as quick as can be, see, the doctors and nurses cared a hell of a lot more than they do these days. Hey, I need more people so I can buy that $246,000 Porsche I'm eyeing at the moment. And my wife needs a new fur. That's usually the trickiest thing. They're too busy wanting stuff instead of actually doing what they actually gave a nurse an oath to heal. And not hurt yet.
Shit
goes on more today than it does since then. I like this just for the fact that it shows a more congenial time as far as the help, as far as the aid given was.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment there, Rex. Very informative. Yeah, apparently in the 1800s, one out of every seven deaths in America and Europe was someone who had contracted consumption.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, me neither. Me neither. All right. Well, great writing, Jody. Thank you for sharing that. And what do we got next, Rex?
Stubborn Love by Jenny the Deep.
All right. It's hard to take your silence with a grain of salt when you always declare me at fault. Fell in love with each other too fast. Now on opposite sides, I reflect on our past. Shared laughs and tears kissed away each other's fears. Hardship after hardship, we grew apart. Fell out, but still I hang on to your heart. Why do we have to both be so stubborn? All we do now is shy away from concern. I can feel love electrify our hands. Yet every time we touch, asking for one more chance. Show me what it's like to smile again. Remind me why I stay if you can. If it is me that makes your heart weep, then tell me, I'll understand, and we'll let you be free. End poem. All right, and your thoughts, Rex?
I like that opening stanza. That touch of humor to it, with that that's a little bit of grain of salt, and then dropping in when you almost declare me at fault. But then the back end here hits on the idea of, even though she said they grew apart, hardship after hardship, the truth is they stopped talking, no communication. And the idea is hitting that note of why do we both have to be so stubborn. That's the idea. Neither one of you actually wants to compromise on anything.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. I too really liked that opening stanza, the first two stanzas with the idea of both being stubborn. And you're right, because relationships have to be 100-100. There's got to be compromise most time, I think, on both sides. You know, that kind of give and take that creates balance. I like that, you know, she writes a heartfelt write about two people who are both extremely stubborn and, as you were mentioning, Rex, don't really communicate, which is unfortunate because it appears that they both still have feelings for each other, you know, and that they've been through a lot together. You know, when you see lines like hardship after hardship, we grew apart, fell out, but still I hang on to your heart. You feel like, you know, there's a couple who's been through a lot and things like that. When you go through a lot of hardships together, it's either going to make you or break you. So, but great, right, Jenny? And glad you were inspired. All right. What do we got next?
Past Present by Thomas Bean. Judgment belongs only to those who know. Most don't. Knowledge only a possibility, a construct instructs, leaves no protection. Everyone watches, decides limits, steals. You can't see, but feel it coming. Every day is a collision. No matter how often wiped away, truth comes back. The answers, the ones that matter, are internal.
Read there, Rex. The picture that Tom wrote to is of a girl standing in front of a chalkboard doing what appears to be like some advanced algebra. Of course, I went no regular algebra from advanced because it all looks advanced to me. But I love his take on this prompt. And I like how he wrote it with short lines, like between like one to no more than four words per line. It almost looks like the idea of somebody writing down a chalkboard, you know, making a list. trying to find those answers. And I like the first stanza with judgment belongs only to those who know, most don't. It's that idea of being the first one to cast the stone if you're without any sin. You know, if you truly have the knowledge, you know, but you don't, you can have knowledge about certain things, but be open to the idea that you don't have knowledge about everything. I like also where he says that knowledge only a possibility construct instructs leads no protection. That idea that we have the opportunity to gain knowledge, to learn every day, really is a thought-provoking write all the way through. Great formatting. No matter how often wiped away, truth comes back. The answers, the ones that matter, are internal. And I like those stanzas because of the fact that it speaks to me on, you know what, you can try all you want. You can try to push away the truth. You can stick your ears in your finger, you know, your fingers in your ears, I said, and, you know, cover your eyes. You can do whatever you want, but the truth will keep coming back. And in the end, you really have to learn to trust yourself, trust your instinct, you know, and really learn to think for yourself. And eventually, you know, the truth is going to be revealed and you're going to find yourself gaining more knowledge. But a great write by Tom and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
I'm going to go with the idea of gaslighting, especially since he hits on the idea No matter how often wiped away, truth comes back. All right, so that comes with the idea, especially with up top, judgment belongs only to those who know, most don't. The idea, nobody asks questions, nobody does investigation, nobody digs because they're too easily swayed in the moment of their own thoughts because they don't actually know anything. Knowledge only a possibility. A construct instructs leads no protection. Yes. A construct does instruct, but it does lead you, and it offers no protection if it is based on bullshit. Everybody watches, decides, limits, steals. You can't see, but you feel it coming. That's a change, a wind in movement. Every day is a collision. That comes to what's going on around the world today. The thought of being wiped away, truth always comes. Yes. Especially since we've gotten into the digital age, all those lies you keep offering up. Hey, didn't you just say this? No, I didn't. Actually, yes, you did. Here's the proof. Morons. The answers, the ones that matter, are internal. It is, as you said, using your own judgment, being aware and understanding, and keeping your mouth shut if you don't know something about something, but learn it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's important. Great comment there, Rex. All right. So what do we got next?
Art Lover by Ruby 2446.
All right. In a world of black and white, even more sadly, where they touched, everything turned gray. Colors seem to have been obliterated by war, and yet when the bombs were silenced, it hadn't found its way back. Sylvia had always visited galleries, exhibitions. She enjoyed paintings, especially portraits of a slightly sensual nature, and she missed having these on show over the past few years. One of the first exhibits to arrive after the ceasefire was a collection of modern sculpture by an artist unknown to her. She ventured along on her lunch break. She was awestruck. One piece of work literally stopped her in her tracks. a piece of smooth varnished ebony that to her had all the seductive sensuality of the human body, smooth lines, curves, and mounds, arms wrapped as if in modesty. Even when she looked again, two lovers intertwined, intimately close, not a breath between them. She felt her heart rate quicken as she let the piece dance before her eyes in all its possibilities. It astounded her how excited she got, but her spirit had been starved of new visual art for years. This to her was not only visible in a portrait way, the three-dimensional piece was untouched but tactile. Her mind could feel its grace and contours, its fluidity. Her eyes sparkled with joy. Something deep down and repressed, unfurled. A door to her spirit opened. Her nerves jangled in anticipation. She looked forward to the next piece, which, with unremembered enthusiasm, what it might offer, bring back among art quelled along. A longing she hadn't even realized had gnawed at her soul during the stolen years. She suddenly felt alive. A spark ignited. Her passion for art turned on a switch. The gray outside in the depressed streets, now in exterior sadness. Life and color had returned to her heart as she moved to the next piece, a spring in her step and a glint in her eyes. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, she's colorized the visuality of the picture itself with depth and emotion, because the woman in the picture is stark, almost dour in appearance and look. But she's colored it in such a fashion that brings to life the fact that it's the country's been at war for years and she hasn't had the enjoyment of visiting a museum. Now that she can, she's found something new to gaze at. She's struck by its beauty and how it's bringing new life to her. And so how bleak and everything is outside seems to get a little colorized with the fact there's a bit of joy even in the starkness of her reality in the aftermath.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I like how this spoke on that period. It speaks to me on the period like right after World War II, and during World War II, particularly in Nazi Germany, a lot of art that was considered not acceptable was either destroyed and, or had to be hidden. But also because, when a country's in war, I know during World War II, there was a lot of metal objects that had to be cut back on. In fact, it was actually because of the need to save metals during World War II that women started wearing what is closer now to the regular modern bra rather than the corset. Not that has anything to do with the picture, except for the fact that I'm just talking about how, doing sculptures with material would have been particularly difficult in times of war. And it could be any war, but I get the impression of, maybe either World War I or World War II. And it not only, I think, represents this right, an amazing story, right, that not only represents this woman's feelings, but the feelings of a country that hasn't been able to enjoy and appreciate the beauty of art, because they've been under that weight of war. And I like that Ruby brings in the excitement of the woman and the sensuality of the art and her emotional reaction to it. And really a great write all the way through. But I especially like what might it offer being back amongst art quell the longing she hadn't even realized had gnawed at her soul during the stolen years, she suddenly felt alive. A spark ignited her passion for art. You know, and I love that because I can only just imagine what it'd be like to live in the gloominess of a world where you couldn't take time to create or appreciate or even appreciate art, and then to suddenly have that come slowly back. So wonderful, right, and very well done. All right, Rex, what do we got next?
Wounds Are Not Created Equal by Peter Chapman. Wounds are not created equal. The lukewarm glow of our amniotic bedding dissipates as soon as our crown pierces the light and our first breath snuff out lungs with air. We are dropped in a race where there is no finish line because the stadium is so far away. It's a faint pale dot that twinkles at midnight. Still, we gaze through our broken window pane towards the midnight sky, trying to listen for the sound of gold and silver. But poverty waves her fingers to remind us we were not invited. She interrupts our thoughts with wind and rain pattering down from our ceiling on a stack of dirty dishes. And as she clenches her claws to wring our hollow tummies, the other face of her two-headed beast replays our daily movie reel. That daddy prefers the bed with an empty bottle rather than with his missus. That my sister and I should not buy tampons because beans are more important. That we sit on the back of buses or go to unsegregated schools because the starting line has been pulled so far back that it's as normal as Yankee apple pie. But on silent nights, when frogs croak and crickets chirp while bayou willows rustle in the midsummer breeze, I whisper to my sister sleeping above me, we'll crawl blind on scalding asphalt with blistered, bleeding knees just to stay in the race. One day, our Messiah will march us out of this infested marshland and we'll find that bright star to lead us to the finish line. And we'll all snap that shiny ribbon with tears streaking down our faces, exhausted and collapsed on the ground, screaming, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we're free at last. And boom.
Oh, bravo there, Rex. Wonderful read. Would you do me a favor before I comment? Would you be so kind as to read his AN?
Eve Arnold dedicated much of her work to visually document civil rights, poverty, and social injustice. Looking at her portfolio, I got a sense that she wanted to do more than just journalism, but also to make us feel that what she felt as she looked through the lens. I thought it's important to stay true to her genre and to write a poem to express how the photographer made her feel. It made me think about the recent U.S. ruling on affirmative action. Whatever each of our positions is on this matter, we must remember our past and grow from it. I concluded the poem with a quote that couldn't be rewritten more eloquently, no matter how hard I tried.
Thank you very much, Rex. While I do think the poem stands very well on its own, I did also feel it was important to read the AN, so I appreciate that. Oh, my goodness. You know, it's a sad fact of life. And, you know, and life is just so beautiful and so precious, but, you know, it's such a sadness that there's children held in their mother's wombs right now that are coming into a world of greed and hate. Although I think this is more of a reflection of the photography at the time, which was in between the 1930s and the 1950s. You know, but still, there are such, the world is still a broken place. I think it has done a lot of healing in many ways, but in many ways it's still a broken place. I really like the imagery in this, the emotional quality of it. I especially like the stadium is so far away. It's a faint pale dot that twinkles at twilight. Still we gaze through our broken window pane towards the midnight sky, trying to listen for the sound of gold and silver. But poverty waves her finger to remind us we are not invited. You know, that how the hunger, the starvation, the poverty, it's all that somebody can think about, you know, and spirituality in the line, one day our Messiah will march us out of this infested marshland and we'll find that bright star to lead us to the finish line and we'll all snap that shiny ribbon with tears streaking down our faces. And I think that's so beautiful because in a time period like this, a life like this, oftentimes the only hope you have is your spiritual hope in a higher power because humanity and fate seems to have failed at times, but powerful, right, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, based on the picture, I'm going to go with this is during the Depression. Sometime between 1929 and 39. Just because there's nothing on the inside of the house, not even a wall. All you've got is the 2x4s and the outside planks. So it does show a harsher time where you got what you got. And there are plenty of places across America like this, both black and white. And
yeah,
neither one would have made the grade when it comes to we weren't invited. But it does bring a little more stronger with the fact that this was about civil rights. And that Messiah, they did get a few years later after, say 30 years later, when King started rolling around. But that, too, didn't last very, very long with his death. But
yeah,
it changed things. You don't find little shacks like this anymore, except you might find something like this out in the bayou somewhere as one of those hunting or frogging shacks. Hey, we don't need much. Just a house to keep the stuff out while we go out and get the goodies.
That is very true. Sad but true.
Nicely done, Cedar. Thank you.
Yeah, I have to agree. And what do we have next?
Got Happy Iron Anniversary.
Okay. All right. Now, this one is inspired, one of the ones inspired by the artwork of who did I say this guy's name was? Oh, geez. I'm blanking. I have to look at it. Okay. Oswaldo Guayasamin. All right. Happy Iron Anniversary by Jenny the Deep. Made it 6 years through iron tears, good or bad times. I'm yours, you're mine, conquering fears. Only you I hear through these blocked ears. Feeling sublime, lost in your eyes, I'm at peace here. Your love appears like volunteers, erasing lies hidden inside from puppeteers. I disappear in world words unclear. You're so divine, never disguise, love must be clear. True love endears like souvenirs, hard to find, but side by side will come more years. We did it, dear. We faced our fears. Our heads did grind, but we survived. So let us cheer. And poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
Perseverance. Okay. Rolling through the hard times and the good times alike. Hey. But not taking the easy route, passing off, but actually sticking by. And Iron years, 6 years. Iron. Okay. Kind of hits on the notion of iron as being caged, so to speak. But it's a celebration at the back end, so that is a happy note.
Oh, there you go. Iron anniversary. You could get somebody a horseshoe for your anniversary present.
Yeah,
first of all, I'd like to say a happy 6-year anniversary to Jenny and her husband. I hope they had a wonderful day, and I hope they have many more years together to come. And, you know, I like how this is, you know, as you were saying, you know, going through the ups and downs, you know, the sticking it out no matter what happens. I like that this becomes about two people who have really connected. Only you I hear through these blocked ears, feeling sublime, lost in your eyes. I'm at peace here. It's wonderful to find somebody that you can connect with, that you can find and feel a sense of peace with, especially in a world that just seems to constantly want to manipulate and control. And I do love the tenderness of the line, true love endears. So wonderful, heartfelt, right, and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Under the Bridge by Scott Sharp. Discolored eyes lead black tar on the path to the margins, the shadows, dark streets, underpasses protect from the rain, but not much else. The drizzle of noise, car tires whizzing. The drizzle of noise, car tires whizzing on wet highway above, sound like apologies, sympathies blending into the din of silence, light flashing in my eyes. Oh, man. Lips closed like summer, more cold days, cold nights, dark full moon, lunar eyes, frozen under the bridge, living like an ogre. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. Are you doing okay there, Rex?
Yeah, I need to go wash out my eyes. Got something in them.
Okay, well, you go ahead and do that. I will comment on this one, and if you're not back, I'll just move on, but I'll make sure to make it a long comment. So you go do that. All right, so Under the Bridge, that title makes me think of two things. First of all, it makes me think of fairy tales like the Billy Goat Gruff, where there's the troll under the bridge, which would work really well with discolored eyes, bleed black tar. It also makes me think of the song Under the Bridge by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, a lot of their music kind of has the same psychedelic vibe that this poem has. So there's a couple of connections I make with the title. So, discolored eyes, bleed black tar on the path to the margins, the shadows. I like those opening lines because they really connect with the artwork itself. Because if you take a look at the artwork, it's obviously people, but there's a lot of use of blurred lines and solid colors, and to the point where, especially if there's two or more people in the painting, they kind of blend and connect together, where it's oftentimes difficult to tell where one person ends and the other begins. And the drizzle of noise, car tires whizzing on wet highways above, sound like apologies, sympathies blending into the din of sirens, lights flashing like my eyes. You know, I get the impression of actually, you know what, now that I'm reading that and I'm looking at the title and I'm looking at the imagery, I'm actually thinking that this is a write from perspective of somebody who is homeless, living under a bridge in the cities, and isn't really getting those apologies, you know, isn't really getting that human interaction that they need. In fact, like you said at the end, frozen under the bridge, living like an ogre. It's the idea of that person forgotten in society, that person who has nowhere to live, becomes that reject of society and ends up dying alone, forgotten, you know, and yet again, another like John Doe or Jane Doe found beneath the bridge. And I think it's at least that's the impression I get from it. And it's a sad commentary, you know, but powerfully written and great imagery, very well done. All right, Rex, are you back with us?
Yep. I'll go with
doing
that
better?
Angle. We'll find out soon. Yeah, I'll walk with that angle. I do like the description of hitting the angle of, but not much else, the drizzle of noise, car tires whizzing on wet highways above, sound like apology sympathies, bleeding into the din of sirens, lights flashing like my eyes. I like that description in there. And then the more cold days, cold nights, dot full moon, lunar eyes frozen under the bridge, the last notes to life in that moment, living like an ogre. The back end, just an observation more or less of that which he'd be viewed as, because like most things, ogres always lived under the bridge. That's where they come in from the fairy tale angle, except some fairy tales are true.
Absolutely. Great comment there. And that, unfortunately true. Some fairy tales are not true or are true. So, yeah. Hey, Rex, if you don't mind, I did just happen to notice that we skipped Betty Page's poem, which has a recording. I was wondering if we could jump back up to that.
You might want to refresh.
You did? Okay, great. I actually wasn't looking at that page, so thank you. All right, so Solving Riddles by Betty Page. And we have a recording for that, so here we go.
Solving Riddles. Etching chalk on dark blackboard, vividly scintillating, bright, white, colorful, sweet words, guessing all his equations, Joker's sassy harlequin, Gotham, teachers, smacks, rulers, wearing her red flannel skirt. So many she bends over. Decks of cards give out lessons, confused, haunting in goth style, sassy, sarcastic ghost scream, screeching silently demons. Algebra has no meaning. Riddles of Cheshire Cat, lost in peachy labyrinth. Her king finds she's all alone, trapped in her insane madness. Snow White numb over the edge, gazing up at walls so high. Tear down these walls, won't you, Pink? End poem.
Great read and write there, Betty. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, she bites at a lot of things. Joker, Harley Quinn, Gotham, and what else? Then goth style, and you think about ghosts, screeching silently demons, then rides into the Cheshire Cat, and a peachy labyrinth. You know, she kind of paints a different picture with that angle, but then drops in that bottom end, tear down those walls, won't you, Pink? The idea of Pink Floyd's The Wall comes into question right there. And then you hit that We don't need no education is what I'm thinking of. And what was it? The retort? You don't get any pudding if you don't eat your meat. If you don't eat your meat, yep. You can't have any pudding. The idea here being, especially from the top end angle of the equations, and then the Gotham teaches snacks rulers, rules of authority when it comes to teaching, old-time teaching, but also the fact that some of those don't understand the equations and never will. But she also hits on that angle of wearing her red flannel skirt so many she bends over, and then deliberate intention towards the teacher. Decks of cards give out lessons. Double thought in that idea. Sassy, sarcastic, ghost scream. It could be the angle of those around you who offer up who are slightly different than you. The riddles of Cheshire Cat, Lost in Peachy Labyrinth. The Peachy Labyrinth kind of walks a very sensual tone, as well as Won't You Pink on the Last Wall, tear those walls down, so to speak. And Snow White, Numb Over the Edge. That hits me. Cocaine. Gone too far.
Yep, exactly. But I like how she took inspiration from not only the photography, but by so many different elements, so much different cultural elements, you know, like Joker and Harley Quinn, Gotham. I really liked the references to Pink Floyd. The Snow White, Numb Over the Edge, not only, as you were saying, the idea of cocaine, but, you know, also the Pink Floyd song, Comfortably Numb. I did like how this was all about rebellion against authority. Joker, Sassy, Harley Quinn, Gotham teacher smacks rulers wearing her red flannel skirt, so many she bends over. There's a kind of a sexual... deviance and a sexual defiance. That's the word I'm looking for. Defiance within those lines. Decks of cards give out lessons. That makes me think of the whole idea of the house of cards that comes tumbling down. You know, and yeah, there's just I like how this kind of feels like somebody falling apart because they can't get past that wall of authority, and they're so determined to find their way out in the world and to be able to have the freedom to be themselves. But intriguing, right, and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Nan Yai by K.F. Artless.
Oh, is it my turn to read?
Yep.
It is, yes. All right. And I see that we have Hat and Chinaski on the board. So a shout out to both of them. Hello, Hat. Hello, Chinaski. Good to see you both in Late Night Poets. All right. Nan Yai by K.F. Holman. I hold my daughter, flower in a vase, mountainside cheekbones, pottery face. We are formed from the same clay, large and steady figures, standing in front of the basement mirror. But she will go farther, deadheading time and space, her budding hormones a sanctifying grace. We are merely shadow play, cutouts on a domestic stage, but make no mistake, she is my replacement. End poem. All right, and your thoughts, Rex?
Well, a touch of humor in it. First off, that bite in the end, we are merely shadow play, cutouts on a domestic stage, but make no mistake, she is my replacement. The idea of both Shakespeare and a little bit of Twilight Zone in that note. And the thought of differentiation, mountainside cheekbones, pottery face. We are formed from the same clay, large and steady figures, standing in front of the basement mirror. The idea of, she will be your replacement one day when she's a lot older and you've formally passed on. There comes that time when she would be doing the same thing with her daughter. So the idea of replacement isn't so much a replacement as continuation of the line of the angle of thought that comes and moves through time from one generation to the next. So even with the humor, and that I did going from flower in a vase to a pottery face was a nice touch. The mountainside cheekbones kind of give that rise to not being fully formed, but the clay offers up that notion of how one molds the child in that moment before they get to the point where they do replace.
Yep, absolutely. Great observation there. I love the rhyme and flow in this and the imagery metaphors and the idea that it speaks me on the idea of a mother who wants her daughter to be exactly like her, and yet she is becoming her own person. We are formed from the same clay, large and steady figures. That makes me think of when I was a teenager and one of my crazy grandmothers, because I was blessed with two great crazy grandmothers, told me I was shaped like a peasant. I don't know what my grandma, I assume she meant short and sturdy, but I don't really know. Who knows what good old crazy grandma was thinking. I do like the play on words, but she will go farther, deadheading time and space. That's intriguing to me, with the thought of maybe this young girl sees so much in her own mother that's broken that she wants to go as far away from that as possible. And we are merely shadow play. I feel like that speaks on the idea of somebody given no significant value within a culture, but amazing right and very well done. All right, Rex, what do we have next?
Hard-Hearted Hannah by Liquid Mind Forever. Them dry bones, osteoporotic entropy, cloned hydroponic dome, stitched and pearlized atrophy, bewitched glitch, niche, calumny. Played against Sam, the Cossack needs a dusting, acoustical lymphoma, pins and needles rusting. Don't ask me, tell you lies, I've lost my ability to cry, it's all been hurt before. Arm and Hammer, home the goods, woulda, coulda, shoulda, given up beef and pork. My pipes are rusted, can't hear my bones crack, the drum keeps hearing the same old beat. Let me up, I promise not to get bony on you, skeletons subluxated, don't sit near a leaky faucet. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. I am really glad you read that one, because I read this a couple days back, and I read it again today, and each time I've read it, I thought, wow, that, you know, this is going to be perfect for Rex's voice, you know, especially with the $5 to $10 word, but mainly because it had that blues feel. I like the wordplay, the imagery, and the metaphors in this. Great, intelligent word choicing. It sings the blues and you know, makes some references to some great movies and songs. Played Again, Sam. Don't ask me, you know, and I won't tell you lies. I love the references in here, and I feel like it speaks to me on the idea of somebody who's dying, you know, perhaps dying of cancer, but But you see what, yeah, I see the word lymphoma, but, you know, it's the idea of the body just falling apart. You're singing the blues of death. You're singing the blues of the body no longer functioning the way it's supposed to. I've lost my ability to cry. It's all been hurt before. Arm and Hammer, Home the Goods, Woulda, Coulda, Shoulda, Given Up, Beef and Pork. You know, all the things that we think back and say, what could I have done differently? And the sad thing is sometimes they're just nothing, you know. Fate is fate and death is death. And I did like the humor. I have to say in the part six where it says, tie me up, I promise not to get bony on you. That was fun. I liked that. It was, you know, there's a lot of great take on the prop, which is of a guy who's a very skeletal looking, and he's sitting down on a chair completely naked. But you know, it's not a very vulgar picture. And playing a guitar and looks like he's singing. It's very surreal, very abstract looking, but you definitely get the impression of someone who's dying, of someone who's singing the blues. So that end stanza in this vignette had a nice bite of humor to me. Don't sit near a leaky faucet. You know, that idea of trying to stay away from death and the torment of it all. I really liked this write. I thought it fit really well with the chosen prompt and really took a powerful look at those blues sung from unexpected circumstances. So very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
It's about aging. Reminds me of all those little things. Dem Bones. A song, a skeleton song. There's a bunch of this.
Cartoons, yeah.
With skeletons. It hits on those notes. It kind of hits on the idea of both angles, because you're offering an osteoporotic entropy cloned hydroponic dome. Osteoporosis is more of what women get, usually, and more and most of the time. The thought of Played Against Sam, right out of that movie with Bogart. Oh, God, which one was that? I can't remember. It doesn't matter. The Cossack needs adjusting. Again, that idea of not having enough cheek on your ass, so you've got to move around, because now that bone, the Cossack's right at the end of your butt, is aching in the meantime because you spent so much time. You got to make the adjustment. Acoustical lymphoma, pins and needles, rusting. I like that thought. And don't ask me, I won't tell you lies. I've lost my ability to cry. It's all been hurt before. Again, that does hit the sort of music. Arm and Hammer, I thought that was pretty cool. Home the Goods, Woulda, Coulda, Shoulda, Given Up, Beef and Pork. The idea of what you taking heed of what your doctor says. You got to eat less beef and pork. Maybe move into vegetables and some fruit a bit more. Pipes are rushing. Can't hear my bones crack. Again, the age. The drum keeps earing the same old beat. Again, that note. The drum keeps earing. It's almost like kind of a golden earring note to that radar love, so to speak. The same old beat kind of walks that way, but it hits on the idea of the drum. Drum keeps banging, but tinnitus is ringing in, so you can only hear one thing. Tie me up. I promise not to get bony on you. Skeleton subluxated. Don't sit near the key faucet. Again, the idea of, hey, I got no skin. I'm just bones. So you know what? I don't wear diapers, but the faucet might still leak.
Oh, so true. So true. great comment there, Rex. All right. What do we have next?
Space Palms by Janeski.
And he was nice enough to supply us with a recording. So let me find that, and here we go.
We were made like this, strings in a pod, strong, made of color. Gates devouring life are crown jewels of spiritual salvation. Comets sprinkling stars, reaching high upon intoxicated rhythm, swaying as liquid silhouettes. And it's only humanity caged within the incubated greenhouse. Banks of high trolling swells, kissing shores, gently lifted from the distant world. Tubular echoes ricocheting off every canyon, a pack of howling wolves. Voids of pin-dropping silence raised their jaws upwards, pressing pursed pillow lips into my dreams, through enormous limbs into your favorite basket. Our delicate door unlocked.
Wow, I love that. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud, Cal. It is very much appreciated. And Rex, your thoughts?
I'm going to hit a bit on creation. There is some spiritual aspect to this, especially with the back end, through enormous limbs into your favorite basket, delicate door unlocked, the idea of transcendence, moving on to the next realm, whether it's the heaven gates, as it kind of hits at the front, gates devouring life, our crown jewels of spiritual salvation. There is that note walking a certain path. The third one, comets sprinkling stars, reaching high upon intoxicating rhythm, swaying as liquid silhouettes. There's a note of music in that, but it also paints the idea of our look to the heavens, how we've always looked to the heavens, the comets, the moon, the stars. The notice of that which is above draws us, just like the waves on an ocean, a bright moon. And it's only humanity caged within the incubated greenhouse that right there hits me. It's only us on this blue ball, this green earth, so to speak. And it kind of paints in that notice of maybe there is that possibility, whether it's the God, creator God looking down or another race looking down, there it's a note to who and what we are and how we progress through life. Tubular echoes ricocheting off every canyon, a pack of howling wolves. There's a little note to the idea of this meeting that night. And the pin dropping silence, raised jaws upwards, pressing first pillow lips into my dreams. There's a breath of looking towards better days of humanity, seeing a little bit more than just the selfishness of themselves, but also opening wide the notion of eyes and minds to the back end. That thought of the, although it might be a note to spirituality, it could also be a note to the abstract thought of we are better than we are if we just unlock that third eye awareness and saw more than just the singularity of how we started out. Strings in a pod, strong, made of color. Yes, the idea of commonality walks right there. So,
wonderful observations there, Rex. I really like that. I'm glad that Chinaski was inspired, particularly by this painting. You know, I find this artist's work very fascinating, but particularly this painting with the different faces blended together so that one connects to the other. And the more you look at it, it seems like the more different faces you see, especially if you start counting the ones that look like they're turned sideways. This is an amazing vignette, strong imagery and metaphors. I do have to agree that there is a spirituality in this. The idea that we are that caged humanity, looking for something greater, looking for that sense of connection. And I think that's where, like, parts 7 and 8, where it says, you know, the tubular echoes ricocheting off every canyon, a pack of howling wolves voids the pin-dropping silence, raises jaws upward, pursed pillow lips into my dreams. We are seeking answers. You know, we are seeking it either from within ourselves or looking up at the sky, you know, and asking the universe those questions that we need answers to. Through enormous limbs into your favorite basket, our delicate door unlocked. You know, and the mention of dreams, in pressing pursed pillow lips into my dreams, you know, I feel like there's just really this desire for this sense of connection, not only with other people, but perhaps even with the universe itself. It's definitely a wonderful, thought-provoking, right, beautifully written, and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
We have Multiple by Blue Raven. Oh, same pick.
All right.
That was yours.
Yep. Sometimes my faces merge and I feel whole, singular, an identity with edges and boundaries, a person with a name. But mostly I am kaleidoscopic, a full hand of face cards, stranger to yesterday's selves, whether dream or hallucination, the victim of a circus mirror. I fear this collective existence, the unnatural assembling of my half-formed egos, not all aware of our polymorphic nature. I look into their eyes and I see the absence of my soul, vacant rooms without a sign that anyone ever lived there, not anyone who knew me. End poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, by trying to get to the bottom, there's a sense of loneliness, but that loneliness might be self-created because of the fact that she multiple personality, maybe, or the fact that she can't decide on anything, kind of hits that notion. Sometimes my faces merge, and the thought of half-formed egos. So there's some really serious indecision going on that walks that line, but stranger to yesterday's selves, whether dream or hallucination, the victim of a circus mirror. So she's calling herself a victim while also offering up that note of half-formed egos and a number of faces to who and what she is. Yet she calls herself the victim of a circus mirror. Maybe the victim of the circus mirror is the fact that you can't decide on who and what you want to be. You see one thing, you want another, you bleed for something, and yet you hope for this. You can't have all of them at once without actually doing something about it. So the idea is she's indecisive, and that's where she hits on that note of seeing the absence of her soul. Vacant rooms without a sign hits on that idea of there's nothing in those eyes that shows any depth of or semblance of individuality or cognizant awareness within. And then that note of not anyone who knew me, that's just kind of hitting on that idea of nobody's making an attempt to know who she really is, yet she doesn't know who she really is.
Yeah, absolutely. Amen to that. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because when I first read this, I did think multiple personalities. But then as you dig into it, you feel like there's even more to it than that. although I do think that is still a possibility. But I like the reference to the circus mirror. The victim, whether dream or hallucination, the victim of a circus mirror, I fear this collective existence, this unnatural assembling of my half-formed egos, not all aware of our polymorphic nature. You know, it makes me think of the idea that we are not only the reflection, we are the circus mirror. And I like the metaphor in that for the idea that we put up different faces for different people in different circumstances. And I do love the use of the word polymorphic. I thought that was great. But, you know, it's like you were saying, Rex, I'm paraphrasing slightly, but we play so many different parts that it all starts to just crumble because we can't keep up the illusion. We can't keep juggling and playing those different parts. And soon we just don't even know the truth of ourselves anymore. We become lost. That for some reason that ending stanza, there was something in the ending stanza that actually made me think of somebody who has Alzheimer's. I look into their eyes and see the absence of my soul, vacant rooms without a sign that anyone ever lived there, not anyone who knew me. Yeah, I feel like it's that idea of somebody forgetting themselves. And that kind of makes me think of Alzheimer's, even though the rest of the poem doesn't necessarily do that. But it's intriguing and it's beautifully written. And I like how it focuses on the human soul and the human ego and how delicate it is and how easily it can be destroyed, not only by other people, but by our own self. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Singing Naked by Betty Page.
All right, and we do have a recording for that one. And here we go.
Singing Naked. Phantasmagoric, illuminating, elates, colorfully, intrinsic, vivaciously he debates. Life, it seems, so euphoric, enchants, alluring, he baits, elegantly eclectic, setting all records now straight. Playing guitar in the nude, he sings naked poetry, doesn't care if he's called rude, he's magical, chemistry, alchemy, pure mystery, fine-ass mother freaking dude. Sweet, erotic mastery commands me in greatest mood, blowing my mind vividly, lost in lucid fantasies, swinging hypnotically. Serene scenes set your mind at ease, intrigued melodically, luxurious, luscious seas, precise, intricately, swirling round in bright breeze, colorful kaleidoscopes, dope, twisted geometries, twirling, twisted kiss, elopes, ferocious atrocities. Psychedelic ways one copes, intriguing bar scene cities, neon rainbows, songs of hope, lust, vicious monstrosities. End poem.
Great read and write there, Betty. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Man, I love the rhyme and flow in this and the imagery, the raw sexuality that pays tribute to music and poetry and the free spirit. You know, and when a poem starts out with the word phantasmagoric, you just know that you're in for a treat. And, you know, here's somebody who's not afraid to be themselves. They are raw, they are naked, and you know, I don't think of it as a literal nakedness, although, you know, it definitely obviously could be, but an emotional nakedness, somebody who's not afraid to be themselves. you know, strips themselves down to the barest elements of who they are. Playing guitar in the nude, he sings naked poetry. He doesn't care if he's called rude. He's magical chemistry. Alchemy, pure mystery, fine-ass mother freaking dude. I love the fun in those lines. You know, sweet erotic mastery commands me in greatest mood. There's definitely a wonderful sensual element within that. And this was quite the trip. There was definitely, obviously, those moments of psychedelic highs. I really like dope, colorful kaleidoscopes, dope twisted geometries, twirling twisted kissed elopes, ferocious atrocities. It feels like a whole lifestyle of experimentation. So wonderful, right, Betty, and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, this is for the skeleton, right?
Yep.
Okay, I thought so.
The naked one with the guitar, yeah.
Yeah, she's double dipping on this over the skeleton with the sensual angle, because she's riding on the bones of that guitar player, so to speak. The third and fourth one, Stanzas did hit the mark with that, playing guitar in the mood. He sings naked poetry, doesn't care if he's called rude, he's magical chemistry, alchemy, pure mystery, finance, mother freaking dude, sweet erotic mastery, command you in greatest mood. And then it gets a little tighter in the last couple of stanzas. But it hits on that idea of the naked angle and singing poetry, musical poetry. Hits on that idea of heart and soul in the moment where it bleeds through and touches the heart. But she does hit on, commands me in greatest mood, serene scenes, set your mind at ease. The idea of walking into a piece that's not just a pop piece, but kind of walks along those lines of telling a story, or conveying a story that hits the soul. And then she hits on the idea of precise, intricately swirling, rounded by breeze, colorful kaleidoscope, dub twisted geometries, twirling, twisted kiss, elopes, ferocious atrocities. The idea of it's kind of expanded in the moment, the idea of how it's affecting her. And the back angle hit does hit on that note of being drawn to the point where she is lusting for the musician.
I like that, lusting for the musician. Oh, very cool, very cool. And what do we have next?
Hands Extended by Eric Svensson.
All right, and we also have a SoundCloud for that. So here we go.
Hands extended, chalice of birth, pain begets, preempts mirth. Hands extended, valiant vessel becomes a vassal. Clear conduit constitutes an open-ended new life. Primal survival passion, waxen yellow-faced halo. Mother's emaciated arms, a rudimentary pieta. Courageous passion cloys, hands extended, maternal instinct crucifies itself, gives last drops of meager mother's milk. Terseness faces harsh reality. Will grim reaper poverty claim this infant too? Hollow echo of calabash and gourd, life's accord longs for birth, species promulgation, Pieta mothers in third world countries suffer bane of famine and malnutrition still culls hope. Harsh hyperbole, Yahweh children are seen as wealth, more valuable than gold, silver, or rubies. Gaia's handmaidens, ash and sackcloth, when infants perish. Still arms extend, hands grope, grasp, yellow futility straws.
Amazing read and write there, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And your thoughts, Rex?
Taking that picture and dug deep into it and offered up a thought that really paces itself right from the outset. Chalice of birth, you already know where he's going. Pain begets, preempts mirth. Hands extended, valiant vessel becomes a vassal. Clear conduit constitutes an open-ended new life. And now hits on that idea of double open-ended, where it could be open or it could be ended. But later he hits on that idea Pieta mothers in third world countries suffer bane of famine and malnutrition still calls hope. The idea of most babies die under that circumstances. And he hits on that with that question, will grim reaper poverty claim this infant too? So it's biting in that idea of she is emaciated. He's got that here too. So giving last drops of meager mother's milk. So he's hitting on the full boat of where third world angles are born onto the mind, where most would never ever see that nor acknowledge it. Yes, it is there. It is something that is quite rampant in third world countries, especially those that are poverty stricken, because the world takes everything from them yet gives them nothing in return except more shit to shovel. So I do like this for the fact that he dug deep into it and pulled out something which is really wonderful.
Oh, I have to agree. Absolutely. Yeah, you can tell that that Eric, when he wrote to this, really became engrossed in the message of the artwork and brought it forth in his poetry. I love the message to Michelangelo's Pieta, and because it does have a similar look. You know, it's this mother cradling her child, but they're both skeletons, and the darkness that envelopes them. Yeah, the thing with this particular artist, Oswaldo Guayasamin, is that a lot of his artwork was based on social injustices that he saw within his lifetime. And that's why a lot of his artwork represents death and the struggles of life, especially in third world countries. And the fact that this looks at the power of a mother's love and the sadness of sacrifices that are made all in the name of greed, because, as we were talking about before, the world is filled with greedy people and the harsh reality of mothers dying and trying to feed children who are dying. Hands extended, maternal instinct crucifies itself, gives last drops of meager mother's milk. Terseness faces harsh reality. Will grim reaper poverty claim this infant too? It's so sad. And then we really love this all the way through, but also especially the ending where it says, harsh hyperbole, here where children are seen as wealth, more valuable than gold, silver, or rubies, die as handmaidens, ash and sackcloth, when infants perish. People just need to understand that, that you know, life is a gift. Children are a gift. And, you know, the places where people understand this the most, children are being snatched up by death, you know, starving and suffering. And it's just sad. It's very sad. But, yeah, this definitely, I have to agree, he really immersed himself into the emotional quality of the artwork, and this poem was very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Brain Freeze by Diane D.
Okay, I'm sorry. Remind me, is it my turn?
Yep.
The drive-in stopped for a shake. My two lips make a choice. Down the funnel, out the straw tip, drip drops of vanilla ice. Smack me back, Jack, sucked my brain out. Rockets left and right, skulls on fire ignited by frost, snatched my taste and stole my sight. Suck your breath in, whip a hard gasp, and freeze your body still as frozen chips of crystal ice spritz freeze you against your will. Like falling awake, it seizes you, sends sparks plugs down your veins. Held hostage from your neck up, you're zapped with brain freeze pain. It's like sticking a finger in a socket and pulling out a wire, then plugging that into a fog, starting a brain freeze fire. Mirror dust of silver shavings, send your cranium cracks, feed your cranium cracks. Brain freeze scraps a viral nerve and spreads like smoke from stacks. Of 30 seconds that last like days, eyes are squeezed slit red. Until brain freeze finds to let you go, you're trapped inside your head. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
Oh, I find it humorous, for one thing, because she laid it out quite well. But it hits on that idea of experiencing brain freeze and rolling through the court, trying to explain it to someone who's never had it. But, yeah, you suck on that, down the funnel, out the straw tip, drip of drops of vanilla ice, and you're sitting there and you're sucking, and you keep sucking because you're enjoying it. And all of a sudden, you get that that snap back motion as she puts it, and all of a sudden, oh, I shouldn't have done that. And then everything lights up. I think she overdid it a bit on the back end because you got brain freeze and all the last four stanzas. So that kind of overdoes it a bit. If she'd gotten out of those three of those four, it would have left a larger impact by just using the brain freeze in the last stanza itself. But it does walk the tone, and it is a clever piece of how it actually occurs, and maybe she couldn't walk out of the need to actually drop brain freeze and make it stick hard within the mind. Yeah, you've done that too. You got to admit it. I know you won't, but you have to do it to yourself. So maybe the idea of the four on the back end were to make that point that, yes, stupid, you did it to yourself.
Yep. And I think we've all been there when enjoying something cold and frosty and, you know, like a milkshake and then all that brain freeze hits. I always find, and a great comment there, Rex, I always find that it helps to press like the area right between your eyebrows. You just take and you press your finger on there, and that actually helps with brain freeze. At least it does for me. You know, if it doesn't for you, it's certainly not going to hurt. What's that?
Never had it, so.
Oh, really? You've never had brain freeze?
Nope.
You ever drink milkshakes?
Yeah, but not so that you get such a big draw all at once that it, you get that way? No.
well, Rex, you must have more self-control than the rest of us. Too funny. But I did like, oh, man, the rhyme and flow in this is great. We definitely, many of us have been there. I really like cut your breath and whip a hard gasp and freeze your body still as frozen chips of crystal ice spritz freeze you against your will. That whole idea of being like lost in the moment, and just being completely like, you know, not being able to do anything, you know, and part of me wonders if maybe while this does say brain freeze, obviously many times in the poem, so it's literally about brain freeze, but it does, I have to say, make me think of like migraine headaches and other physical ailments that kind of just keep you trapped in the moment to where there's nothing else that you can focus on. Really wonderful write and very well done here, Diane. All right, what do we have next, Rex?
Laments of a Mother's Arms by Snow Bagley. In twilight's embrace, a woeful scene unfold, a mother cradling child, her sorrow untold. Her arms, once full of dreams and hope, now bear the weight of loss, tightly to cope. As moonlight weeps upon her ashen face, the tender rhythm of her heart begins to race. Her child, fallen like a leaf in autumn's breeze, rests peacefully, wrapped in fragile memories. With teardrops as a symphony, gently cascading, she clings to a precious one, never fading. Her embrace, a sanctuary of love's embrace, a fortress of solace against life's cruel chase. Like a wounded bird with broken wings, she shields her child from life's hard stings. Her embrace, a testament to love's might, defying despair, embracing a longest night. Ivory crease upon her brow tells a tale of a love that transcends and courage won't fail. Her fingers intertwine like vines in a dance, holding on to the fragments of second chance. In her arms, time stands still, frozen in sorrow, as she kisses the brow of her dear one tomorrow. Two souls entwined, bound by a bond profound, whispering secrets in silence without a sound. The night weeps with her, stars share her ache, witnessing a mother's heart slowly break. Yet her resolute gaze holds steadfast, for love and loss are forever en masse. In this poignant tableau, sadness unfurls, a mother's arm, a haven for a fallen girl. She carries the weight of a bittersweet fate while cherishing a love that shall never abate. Though her arms may tire and her spirit may wane, her love for her child, an eternal flame, her embrace, a sanctuary, tenderly mends, a mother's love, a vow that never ends. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Rex. Man, I have to say, this one really just touches my heart. I'm really glad that Snow was inspired. You know, the imagery in this is powerful. It's just a really emotionally charged look at a child who is dying. I see within the line, her child fallen like a leaf in autumn's breeze. You know, and autumn is that representation of, you know, the process of dying, not death itself, but the process of dying. And so it just really hits you hard. And also the imagery, like a wounded bird with broken wings, she shields her child from life's harsh stings. That makes me think of the story Rikki Tikki Tavi. I can't remember his name, but you know, the guy who wrote The Jungle Book, you know what I'm talking about. What's his name? Oh, I can't
remember.
Said Rikki, but anyway. Well, no, I said that's the name. No, Rikki Tikki Tavi is the name of the story. The author is the guy who wrote The Jungle Book. That's the person's name I'm blanking out on. But anyway, people know what I'm talking about. But it makes me think of that and how there's this part where the mother bird is pretending to be wounded in order to lead the snake away from her nest, away from her babies. And I like how this speaks on a mother's love and a mother's willingness to sacrifice in order to save her children. And, you know, just beautifully written. I really like the line, two souls entwined, bound by a bond profound, whispering secrets in silence without a sound, that communication without words, beautifully written and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, because of the title and the language that walks to it, it's all about death and pain within that woeful scene, weight of loss wrapped in fragile memories, a leaf falling in autumn's breeze. Everything hits on that note of that which has happened. The child has already passed, and it's that sort of not willing to offer up yet, because it hits on that note. Twilight's embrace, something that walks within the evening's hours, so to speak, the darkness, the note of death rising. In her arms, time stands still, frozen in sorrow. As she kisses the brow of her dear one tomorrow, the two souls entwined, bound by a bond of vows, whispering secrets of silence without sound. Again, secrets without, there's death right there. The night weeps with her, stars share her ache, witnessing a mother's heart slowly break. Yet her resolute gaze holds steadfast, for love and loss are forever on mass. So this is almost a refusal in the moment to give up the child for burial. Doesn't want to let go, because once it's done, it's done.
Absolutely. Yeah. I like that you brought that up, because, yeah, that's sad but true. It's the physically letting go and the emotional strain of it and the finality. So great comment there, Rex. And wonderful show tonight. Thank you, as always, for being a great co-host. Thank you to Chinaski and Hatch for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Thank you to Fill My Eyes for everything she does in the background. Make sure to keep an eye out on all the topic boards and contests put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. You can join us 10 p.m. tonight, Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. As far as contests go, I always have plenty of those. One in particular I'm running right now that needs rights is for Saturday's 12:30 a.m., so Once Upon a Time, and that is Once Upon a Time, Fashion and Beauty, where we are delving into the fascinating and sometimes dark history of clothing and cosmetics throughout the centuries. And Rex, I know you have a couple of contests, so why don't you go ahead and tell us about those?
We got Randy Meisner for Sunday. He was one of the founders of the Eagles. And what have I got for Tuesday? I've forgotten already.
Nikki Six.
Oh, right.
It's Nikki Six from Motley Crue.
Oh, yeah.
Quotes by him.
Yes, come join the crew. Come crew with us for a Motley night after midnight. So, yes, that's a quote for Randy Six in there to play with. And that's about it right now. Oh, except there is another Death in the News musically, so I'll have that one up next.
Yep, I'm looking forward to that too. Sad that once again somebody else passed away, a great musician, but, you know, I think it's a wonderful thing.
I've done skip mode this year. I mean, you got a doing Randy, Robbie Robertson. Just did, Tony Bennett. And before that was, remember, we've done David Crosby, Charlie Ward, Taylor Hawkins, all of them and more just this year alone.
I know. Isn't it sad? I mean, and you know, it's bound to happen eventually. Death comes to us all. But it seems like left and right, these amazing musicians are passing on. So, yeah, And I'm very thankful for your rhythm and rhyme show that pays tribute to them. So, very cool. But yes, I'm looking forward to all the shows this week. And, you know, it's going to be great. It is. So, have a good night, Rex. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night, peeps.